Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. COP30 Global Conference on Climate Change ended well short of expectations. Xi Jinping calls Trump. What's that about? And the phony war in Venezuela is still an option. First, the COP30 conference ended well short of expectations. Donald Trump tried very hard to make COP30 fail, but as Catherine Osborne reports for the Foreign Policy magazine, Brazil's president and host for the conference, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, had other ideas. A key pillar of Brazil's approach to COP30, she writes, is what some climate strategists call coalitions of the doing. The idea is to work with small groups of countries that want to move forward on climate action. So, for example, in the lead-up to COP30, the Brazilians helped craft a plan for a new investment fund to protect tropical forests that had received some $5.5 billion in pledges as of last week. Brazil and the United Kingdom announced a program to help seven countries track and reduce so-called superpollutants, such as methane. And Brazil rallied at least nine countries and the European Union to join a group devoted to collaborating on carbon markets. Interest is also widespread, especially in Southeast Asia, on adoption of green energy technologies, China's strong point. Here again, the United States is odd man out. Despite these efforts, the conference ran into overtime because of disagreements about reliance on fossil fuels and financing of developing countries' climate change plans. The Europeans demanded a clear statement on moving away from fossil fuels, even as European energy companies are right now investing more in fossil fuels to meet rising demand. The Arab states don't want to restrict oil exports, and developing countries such as Nigeria argue that their economic growth depends on fossil fuels. The contradictions extend to Brazil itself, where the state oil companies have a contract to explore for oil near the mouth of the Amazon. In the end, the final COP30 statement avoided any mention of a transition away from fossil fuels. One commentator concluded, quote, "Instead of being remembered as historic, the conference will likely further erode confidence in a process that many environmentalists and even some world leaders have argued isn't up to the challenge of confronting global temperature rise." Even United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said, quote, "I cannot pretend that COP30 has delivered everything that is needed. The gap between where we are and what science demands remains dangerously wide." Xi Jinping calls Trump. What was that about? It is highly unusual for President Xi Jinping to initiate a call to the U.S. president, but he did so on November 24th, following their meeting in Korea. Xi was remarkably effusive about China-U.S. relations. According to the official Chinese readout, Xi said, "Since the meeting in Busan, the China-U.S. relationship has generally maintained a steady and positive trajectory, and this is welcomed by the two countries and the broader international community. What has happened demonstrates yet again that the description of China-U.S. cooperation benefiting both sides and confrontation hurting both sides reflects a common sense that has been repeatedly proven by experience, and the vision of China and the U.S. helping each other succeed and prospering together is a tangible prospect within reach." He said that Trump called him a great leader. Trump hailed the phone call on Truth Social, citing agreements on fentanyl and agricultural exports. Quote, "We have done a good and very important deal for our great farmers, and it will only get better. Our relationship with China is extremely strong. Since our meeting in South Korea, there has been significant progress on both sides in keeping our agreements current and accurate. Now we can set our sights on the big picture," unquote. What is the big picture? Trump didn't say, but surely it's a comprehensive trade deal. Yet Chinese purchases of soybeans are far below what they committed to buy this year. Xi did not mention any soybeans, fentanyl, or other subject brought up by Trump. Xi only talked about Ukraine and Taiwan. He stressed the importance of concluding a fair and binding agreement on Ukraine. He may have been calling to see in what way China might play a part. But his main concern was Taiwan. He reiterated China's long-standing position on foreign interference in an internal Chinese matter. He acknowledged Trump's support for the One China principle. My guess is that Xi brought up Taiwan because of new tensions in China's relations with Japan. The new Japanese Prime Minister, Takaichi Sanai, said Japan would have to help defend Taiwan from a Chinese attack as a matter of national survival. That statement goes beyond anything a Japanese leader had said before. Coming from a leader who is hawkish on China and committed to a significant increase in Japan's military capabilities, the statement produced angry Chinese reactions. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman, for example, said Takaichi's position, quote, has fundamentally eroded the political foundation of China-Japan relations. Trump obtained a long-sought invitation to visit China in April, which Xi will reciprocate later in the year. That little gift from Xi probably helped secure something important to Xi, that Trump would rein in Takaichi, putting improvement in relations with China ahead of U.S.-Japan relations, and for that matter, ahead of Taiwan security. And Trump delivered, advising Takaichi to lower the volume on Taiwan. Takaichi apparently listened. In response to opposition politicians' questions in Parliament, she danced around policy on Taiwan and did not repeat her controversial statement. All this hullabaloo has Taiwan on edge. Trump did not say anything in response to Xi's defense of Chinese policy on Taiwan. The conversation thus feeds into apprehension in Taipei's leadership, which, in contrast with the view of the minority nationalist party, the Kuomintang, which favors greater contact with China, believes that Taiwan's security depends on solid ties with the United States. That is why the Lai Ching-te administration in Taiwan is increasing military spending at an unprecedented level, and why Taiwan's semiconductor manufacturing has promised major new investments in the United States, all in an effort to satisfy Donald Trump. Next, the phony war in Venezuela is still an option. President Trump has wavered in public remarks about what he's going to do about Venezuela. He said he has talked with Nicolas Maduro, but according to CNN, it was an ultimatum that Maduro resign if he and his family want safe passage out of the country. At his cabinet meeting Tuesday, Trump again threatened the use of force against drug cartels, not just in Venezuela, but in other countries. And Trump has told U.S. airlines to stay out of Venezuelan airspace. It's a calculated strategy of intimidation, with direct U.S. intervention probably the last option. The rationale for going after Maduro is paper-thin, that he is the head of Cartel de los Soles, or Cartel of the Suns, a group that doesn't exist. As Phil Gunson, a senior analyst at the International Crisis Group based in Caracas, says, Cartel de los Soles is a pejorative Venezuelan term for corrupt figures in the armed forces who take money from drug traffickers. The name is a reference to the sun insignia on their uniforms. An order by the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, adds to the illegality of U.S. attacks in the Caribbean. During the first attack, September 2nd, on a boat allegedly carrying drugs, two men survived, clinging to the side of the boat. Hegseth reportedly personally ordered them killed in a second assault, though he has denied giving the order and refuses to turn over tapes to the House committee that is investigating his actions. He and Trump are pointing to an admiral in a clear case of scapegoating. Legal experts say this act against unarmed, unthreatening people could be a war crime. Hegseth defended his role, saying, quote, our current operations in the Caribbean are lawful under both U.S. and international law, with all actions in compliance with the law of armed conflict, and approved by the best military and civilian lawyers up and down the chain of command, unquote. Trump told reporters Hegseth didn't say that, the kill order. But a CNN reporter asked aloud if that order may have been responsible for the subsequent departure of two top military officials. An article in Foreign Affairs offers several reasons why any kind of U.S. military action against Venezuela is likely to fail to unseat Maduro. Instead, the author suggests that the U.S. bring Maduro and his opponents to the bargaining table for a power-sharing arrangement. The question that argument doesn't answer is this. What right does the U.S. have to intervene in another country's internal political affairs and try to force a governing arrangement? In other news, Europe's proposal for a Ukraine peace. After being blindsided by a Russia-U.S. peace proposal, European leaders met in Switzerland and came up with an alternative plan that is far friendlier to Ukraine than a plan that originated in Moscow. As reported by The Guardian, the plan says, quote, Negotiations over territory should take place after a ceasefire is agreed and should start from the line of contact, the existing front line. It says both parties would agree how any truce would be monitored under U.S. supervision. Unlike the White House text, the European alternative does not call for Kyiv to withdraw from cities it controls in eastern Donbass. Nor does it rule out Ukraine's membership in NATO, but does point out that there is no consensus over its membership within NATO. There are further eye-catching proposals. They include that Russia give the occupied Zaporizhia nuclear power station to the International Atomic Energy Agency, which would split power 50-50 between Moscow and Kyiv. Ukraine's army would be capped during peacetime at 800,000 soldiers, 200,000 more than in the U.S. draft. Frozen Russian assets would also be used to reconstruct Ukraine, rather than being partly given to U.S. investors. If Moscow were to respect a sustainable peace, according to the European plan, sanctions imposed since 2014 would be gradually eased and Russia would be brought back into the Group of Eight. Now the ball is in Russia's court as Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner meet with Putin. U.S. immigration policy is virtually let no one in. The Trump administration is embracing an immigration policy that goes completely against the American experience. Now, virtually no one is welcome. The latest victims are people from Myanmar, Somalia, and Afghanistan. The administration is ending temporary protected status for Myanmar refugees, despite the ongoing civil war that is the basis for protected status. Somalis have also long had protected status, but that too is ending, again, despite the upheaval in their home country. Trump said Somalis have caused great trouble in Minnesota, without evidence, of course. ICE launched an operation Tuesday against Somalis in Minneapolis. Their country stinks, said Trump, and we don't want them in our country. Right after an Afghan asylum seeker shot two National Guard members in Washington, Trump declared that he will permanently pause migration from all third world countries, pause asylum applications, and stop issuing visas to Afghan refugees. Even people who are in the United States will not have their asylum petitions considered. Nor will Afghanis who helped the United States during their war and been placed under a special immigrant visa program be granted visas for now, in apparent violation of federal law. It's apparent that the shooting was all that Trump and Stephen Miller needed as justification for realizing their whites-only immigration plan. The admission of 7,500 Afrikaners from South Africa and the appointment of a U.S. ambassador to South Africa who criticizes the anti-apartheid struggle of Nelson Mandela are further proof of how explicitly racist U.S. immigration policy has become. In case you missed it, by the way, here is Trump's Thanksgiving Day message on immigration. Quote, "A very happy Thanksgiving salutation to all of our great American citizens and patriots who have been so nice in allowing our country to be divided, disrupted, carved up, murdered, beaten, mugged, and laughed at, along with certain other foolish countries throughout the world, for being politically correct and just plain stupid when it comes to immigration." Unquote. Finally, two updates. From Brazil, where former President Jair Bolsonaro has been sentenced to 27 years in prison, starting immediately. The Supreme Court found that Bolsonaro was a flight risk after he tried to remove his ankle monitoring bracelet and sought refuge in several embassies. Trump said he would be speaking with Bolsonaro soon, only to find that Bolsonaro was already in prison. Perhaps Trump thought the U.S. Embassy in Brazil would protect Bolsonaro, but Brazil never gave him a chance. And then from Israel, the Israeli Defense Forces remain active outside Israel's borders, especially in Lebanon, where it assassinated Hezbollah's chief military leader in Beirut. Sources in Lebanon say that Israel's attacks are weakening the Lebanese government and preventing it from disarming Hezbollah, an aim that has public support. Other observers see these military moves as stemming from Prime Minister Netanyahu's ambition to keep international tensions high during the upcoming election campaign. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.